Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, November 9th, 2018. South Sudanese church leaders say forgiveness is the path to peace.
When conflict erupts between communities or between individuals, the relationship will be no more like before.
And hundreds of patients in Bor regain their sight.
I'm happy that people who have not been seeing, they've been directed by other, can be able to see again by themselves. They see the food, they eat.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The South Sudan Council of Churches is spearheading a new campaign to promote peace, reconciliation, and forgiveness. South Sudan Council of Churches says the one-month campaign entitled Experience the Power of Forgiveness will encourage people to reconcile and forgive one another. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Juba.
Reverend Canon Emmanuel Natania, who heads the Ecumenical Department at the South Sudan Council of Churches, says the campaign will enable all South Sudanese to share their past bitter experiences of the conflict and urge people to forgive those who wronged them. Natania says allowing victims and perpetrators to share testimonies will foster true reconciliation.
When conflict erupts between communities or between individuals, the relationship will be no more like before. So in reconciliation, we are hoping that we will be able to reconcile people back to live together in harmony. We cannot live together unless we forgive one another. Forgiveness will forge the way for reconciliation.
Natania says because of the country's troubled past, everyone in South Sudan is traumatized.
That is why we need to be healed from this. And we can do it. We cannot do it unless we are able to come up and speak about our grievances.
Reverend Natania says the campaign will distribute more than 25,000 copies of books and an MP3 audio device recorded from individuals about their experience during the war in a bid to reach all communities. He says it will also involve radio and TV shows. As part of the campaign, the church has also opened a call center through which people can call in to share their experience of the war. 10 volunteers at the Juba-based call center take calls from people across the country. Volunteer Vicky Nyantiok says she's touched by some of the stories she hears from callers.
It's all talk about power to forgive. And also we have books and also Mega Voice. We talk more about power to forgive.
Okay.
So if someone call us and if we request for a book or a Mega Voice, we could even issue them books and also Mega Voice.
Natania says South Sudanese across the country are welcoming the campaign aimed at healing the wounds of the past so South Sudanese can move forward as united people. Natania praised the government and opposition groups for signing the Revitalized Peace Agreement. He says now that the parties have signed a deal, they need to speak one language, the language of peace. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
A non-profit organization called Partners in Compassionate Care is helping blind South Sudanese regain their sight. The organization's executive director says the group hired doctors to conduct surgeries on the blind at Bor Civil Hospital, where they have operated more than 100 patients since Saturday. All 100 are now able to see again. Dengai Deng has the story for VOA from Bor.
96-year-old Peter Lam Mormor says he lost his vision about 10 years ago. Speaking in Arabic, Mormor says before his operation, he had no hope of regaining his sight.
My eyes have been operated on, and I have begun to see the world. People moving around, and I want to tell the people of South Sudan that let us abandon tribalism, and let us embark on developing our country, so that good things like this continue to come.
Speaking in Dinka, 60-year-old patient John Aboy says he is overjoyed to be able to see again.
I want to thank God for these people who have traveled from very far to come and help us. I want to tell them that you are serving God by helping people like us. God will bless you as you continue helping the world.
Partners in Compassionate Care hired a South Sudanese doctor to perform the surgeries. Dr. Santino Malang says most of the more than 150 patients he has operated became blind from either cataracts or trachoma.
Some people have been blind, they've been fooled by children, but after we operate them now, they are moving alone. So the surgery has been successful. I'm happy that people who have not been seeing, they've been directed by other, can be able to see again by themselves. They see the food they eat, they see their children that had been helping them, and now they can be doing their own things alone. So I'm also happy.
Dr. Malang says while he's happy for those who can now see again, he is sorry for the rest of the people he could not help.
I'll be ready to come back to help the people that were left behind, crying for help, but there's no way we can do. So I'm not new in Jonglei. I've been operating in Jonglei since 2009 up to 2013, when the crisis, the fighting broke out. That's when I stopped coming. The last time I was here was in December. I left on December 9, 2013, until now that I came back. So seeing there's no, with the peace that has come now, I think if there's people that will get some supply, will be frequently coming.
Speaking in Dinka, patient Rachel Acholding says she will be forever grateful to Dr. Malang and partners in Compassionate Care.
It's God who brings good things. There's nothing we can give back to these people who have helped us, but we can just thank them. I want to tell our leaders to support this organization so that they can be able to help others who have not been operated on. Now God has brought this people from America, and here they are treating us.
Deng Ajang Jongkuch, Executive Director for Compassionate Care, says hundreds of people have been screened for surgery.
We screened about 700 people and 200 and around 230 qualify for surgeries, but we only need 150. That's the challenge, because the lenses were bought only for 150. And you cannot do an operation without lens. So many people will be left behind. So far, we operate on about 108, 110. And today, I think we're going to operate for another 24 of them. So by the end, on Friday, we should have 150.
Jongkuch says each surgery costs about $100, cheaper than just about anywhere in the world for the same operation. Jongkuch says the non-profit spent about $20,000 to perform the operations on the patients of Bor. Many, he says, was well spent. Partners in Compassionate Care is a non-profit registered in the Midwestern U.S. state of Michigan and South Sudan. It was formed in 2004 by American David Bowman to provide humanitarian health care to South Sudanese. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaiding in Bor.
Witnesses say at least 25 people were killed when three car bombs went off minutes apart today outside a hotel in the Somali capital. Police say four heavily armed attackers were shot dead as they tried to storm El Safi Hotel, located at a major intersection. Most of the victims, who included two women and an 8-year-old child, were passersby and passengers in a mini bus and several rickshaws. Security forces rescued dozens of people from the hotel rooms. The Sahafi is across the street from the headquarters of the Somali Criminal Investigations Department in Mogadishu. The militant group Al-Shabaab said it carried out the attack. The Al-Qaeda affiliate has been fighting to overthrow the internationally backed Somali government for over a decade. A witness who was inside the hotel said the front wall of the hotel building was largely destroyed by the explosions, which blew off windows in other parts of the building. Australian police say they have fatally shot a Somali-born man who drove a truck loaded with gas cylinders onto a busy Melbourne sidewalk, then stabbed three people, killing one. Police say they believe the attack in Australia's second largest city is linked to terrorism. Officials say the Counter-Terrorism Command has taken a lead role in the investigation. Victoria State Police Commissioner Graham Atchison says the suspect was known to police, but they have not released his name. Police initially responded to a report about burning vehicle, but when they arrived at the scene, they found that people have been stabbed. The suspect was swinging a knife at two police officers when he was shot in the chest. He was transported to a hospital where he died. The Norwegian Refugee Council warns continued humanitarian and political neglect of crisis in Central African Republic will lead to new catastrophes in the country. The Secretary General of the Norwegian Church of the Norwegian Refugee Council, Jan Egeland, is touring the country and has found massive humanitarian needs and escalating violence against civilians and aid workers. He says thousands of single mothers are being raped each day because they live in camps surrounded by armed men and have no safe place to go. Next week, the UN Security Council will meet to renew the mandate of the peacekeeping force, which is set to expire on November 15. Egeland says the Central African Republic is now the world's third worst humanitarian crisis behind Yemen, Syria. He spoke with my colleague Kim Lewis from Bangui.
Well, I'm now in the capital of the Central African Republic, Bangui. The last couple of days I've been to some of the worst conflict zones, but also the areas where peace is being rebuilt. And frankly, I am shocked by how vulnerable the situation is and how the country now is on the track to new conflict unless there is a much greater effort from international actors, from the neighboring countries, from the parties and the government inside to avoid new horrific war. Already, the civilian population is abused, displaced, women exposed to the most horrific sexual violence. And it's not once a month. It's every single day a number of places in the country. So it's shocking that it is so neglected and so forgotten, because this is one of the worst crises on earth.
Why do you think the international community has neglected the CAR?
In 2016, I remember vividly, many have forgotten, that there was a huge conference in Brussels that agreed on a concrete plan for reconciliation, peace and reconstruction of this country in the heart of Africa. Lots of money was pledged. The European Union that was hosting with the United Nations, other donors like the United States, said, we're really committed to turn a corner now here. We rely on a new democratically elected government. We hope and believe that the neighbors will help bring peace to the place, etc. Since then, it's been not going in the right direction. The neighbors of the country are bringing fuel to the fire. 80% of the country is under the rule of armed opposition groups. In the camps where I visited, single mothers with five children cannot leave the camp where they get some humanitarian assistance from us. If they visit the land that they had to flee from, they will be abused, killed, raped, etc. So, next year, 2019 will be the year before new elections, and it's sort of the end of this period where one agreed to build peace and reconstruction here. I think really the European Union, the African Union, the UN Security Council, where the United States is the most important actor, need to sit down with the neighbors of Central African Republic and with the government, everybody look in the eyes and say, we're failing the civilian population of the Central African Republic. Now we're heading straight into another horrific war engulfing the civilian population unless we invest much, much more than a peace process that functions in security and protection of civilian population in a real nationwide humanitarian and developmental effort.
Also, I just wanted to briefly touch on the humanitarian aid workers. I understand that they're being attacked as well.
Indeed. I have 260 heroic colleagues in this country, and they are at risk all the time, really. In some areas, it's really too dangerous to do humanitarian work. It's one of the top three places on earth with attacks against humanitarian workers. A number of colleagues have been killed from other humanitarian organizations this year alone. And it's just a testament to the lawlessness. The way it is now, it cannot continue. We have to have an international effort to again bring attention to and a better effort to the Central African Republic.
That was the Secretary General of the Norwegian Refugee Council, Jan Egeland, speaking with my colleague Kim Lewis from Bangui, Central African Republic. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, health officials in Yei River State prepare to combat Ebola. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the best compliment that someone has given you?
Someone told me that I have white teeth and I like it. I felt good. Someone recognizing you that you have beautiful teeth, it makes you feel okay, feel loved.
They said I'm beautiful and it felt so good. Yeah, it feels so good to be called so you are beautiful.
The best compliment is one that I got from my mom when she told me that I was a very hardworking person.
The best compliment was from my girlfriend. Yeah, she said I look nice to her. And actually, I felt good and happy.
The best compliment I've received in life was from work, 10 years award of service. I was given an award for having served for 10 years.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. As South Sudan continues its journey to implement the September 12 peace agreement, one researcher is focusing on the role of restorative justice in the country. Marisa Enser, adjunct professor at the Justice and Peace Studies Program of the Georgetown University, was in Ural in September and says peace conference and restorative justice mechanism play an important role in South Sudan.
What I wanted to share with some of the faculty and students that attended the conference is not just a report on what went on, but the meaning that I think that peace conferences have in traditional and customary conflict resolution mechanisms in South Sudan and the prospects for hopefully sustained peace in the country.
So what does your research or your observations in your role tell you about the role of peace conferences in South Sudan?
Well, there seem to be two different, obviously connected, but separate peace processes going on in South Sudan. The one we hear about in the news primarily is the high-level peace negotiations that have been taking place in Addis Ababa, brokered by IGAD, the Intergovernmental Authority on Development. At the national and subnational level, there's a number of additional processes, including local peace conferences, the establishment of peace committees, and both in South Sudan as well as in the diaspora, the refugee camps, we've seen the emergence or the resurgence in some cases of a very large and growing, although rather disorganized network of youth peace building groups. So there's a number of initiatives that are operating sometimes in cooperation, most often not so much, but everybody seems to be.
What does restorative justice look like in South Sudan?
Well, I think that it's important to distinguish between the notion of retributive justice, which is perhaps more common in the North or the Global South, and a notion of criminal justice based on the punishment of offenders, rather than on rehabilitation. Now, while ideas of accountability are also very much present in South Sudanese traditional notion of justice, I think that elements of restorative justice are a perhaps even more important component, and that this refers to an understanding of criminal justice that focuses on the rehabilitation of offenders. So there's still a system of accountability, but the focus is less on punishment and or it includes punishment, but the focus is primarily on the rehabilitation of offenders through reconciliation with victims and the community at large. Okay? And I would argue that notions of restorative justice are a fundamental aspect of traditional justice systems and customary law in South Sudan. For instance, the practice of dia, or blood money, which is was constantly being mentioned during the negotiations that took place at the peace conference. And this refers to the financial, although it's typically not money or not necessarily money, compensation, some kind of compensation that is paid to the victim or the heirs of the victim in cases of murder or some kind of bodily harm or property damage or stealing. And this has the potential of restore the harmonious relationships between the communities involved, I would argue, to a higher degree than a form of retribution which only focuses on punishing the offenders, especially because the causality, you know, the reason why these violations of the law or crimes, if you prefer, are committed is very complex. Simply punishing the perpetrators doesn't address the reason why they keep happening. And so one of the functions of these peace conferences involves discussions around the restoration of harmonious relationships between the communities, including the harmonization of blood money processes. That was mentioned by every single one of the delegations that participated. And I don't know whether you would like me to speak a little bit more about the particular details of this conference or speak about them in general.
That was Marissa Ensah, adjunct professor at the Justice and Peace Studies Program of Georgetown University, speaking to my colleague Ayen Deng Bior from Washington. Health officials in Yei River State are enacting measures to prevent the spread of Ebola from neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo. The Director General of the State Ministry of Health says officials are concerned that people infected with Ebola could enter the area almost anywhere, given the porous borders between the DRC and South Sudan. As Daniel Martin reports for VOA from Yei, only 3 of the 15 main routes between the two countries are being monitored.
The South Sudanese town of Yei is about 185 miles or 300 kilometers from the Democratic Republic of the Congo. The epicenter of the Ebola outbreak is in Ituri, which is in the northern part of DRC. Nonetheless, health officials and workers at Yei Civil Hospital are putting in place measures to deal with the possibility of the deadly virus migrating into the area. Dr. James Wani is director for Yei Civil Hospital and manager for the hospital's newly created Ebola Emergency Response Center.
In the case management we have in the hospital, we have put a tent that is for isolation, specifically for suspected cases. As you know, we don't have any suspected cases in Yei. This is just for preparedness. Yes, there are some people who are coming from rural areas and even from Congo. There are some panya roads, the roads that cannot be accessed by the surveillance team or the screening site. So they come direct to Yei. Even the hospital has not any vehicle currently. So if there is any case suspected, even in the screening point, if the case needs an ambulance, really there is not any vehicle to be used.
Dr. Wani says health workers are educating residents about how Ebola is spread. Yei resident Helen Kiden says most people in the area have limited knowledge about the Ebola outbreak in DRC.
The issue is in the remote areas, especially those areas which are cut away from Ye town. They don't know much about Ebola. And then maybe they can also design other place chat in their local language, basically Kakwa or Arabic. For those who may not read English, we really have to train the local leaders, church leaders, on preventive measures, the ways of transmission. It needs like a teamwork for all NGOs because we are not far away. Right now, there's no screening even being done and people are coming from Lasu to Ye town, which are not being screened.
Ye town resident Emmanuel Taban says the border is porous and travelers move freely between South Sudan and the DRC. He wants Juba to restrict the movement of both government and rebel forces along the border areas and establish Ebola screening centers.
What we are getting here in Ye town, we are finding different peoples are coming from our rural and urban area outside next to our border, which is Libogo, near to the Congo. They are coming for us here, and then we don't find how those people are even. Because I heard of Ebola, where these kinds of diseases coming from. I don't know how government will go and help for us in these kinds of disease.
James Wani, Director General at the State Ministry of Health in Ye River State, says the state has identified 15 entry points into South Sudan, but only 4 response centers have been established along the border.
In the case management we have in the hospital, we have put a tent that is for isolation, specifically for suspected cases. As you know, we don't have any suspected cases in Ye. This is just for preparedness. Yes, there are some people who are coming from rural areas and even from Congo. There are some panya roads, the roads that cannot be accessed by the surveillance team or the screening site. So they come direct to Ye. Even the hospital has not any vehicle currently. So if there is any case suspected, even in the screening point, if the case needs an ambulance, really there is no any vehicle to be used.
Wani says state authorities are carrying out the house-to-house awareness campaign and other programs so that South Sudanese know how to prevent the spread of viral hemorrhagic fever. Daniel Friday Martin, VOA News, Ye Town.
That report by Daniel Friday from Ye Town brings us to the end of our show for this Friday. We now leave you with a song entitled Senti, which means money, by Street Culture.
Fanga mwangete sende sende yo kurusu kurusu maf bongo bongote fanga mwangete
ane ni kumanga ditingo mia sende mawamba mba anadibo okule bongo swalaro sende yo atila kibino nitoni sende yo nadiba mangu baku majibila sende la fanya kwani nyonguku la mima ndofo siku majibila Bagu kima mbamba, mande nibo Alio marori, azini, angazi avasi Odudia si, majubila Leba nyakuwa rindundu, izi mungu Sende, sende
Sende, sende yo Kurusu, kurusu mafu Bongo, bongo te Faranga, mwengete Sende, sende yo Kurusu, kurusu mafu Bongo, bongo te Faranga
Asuma 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 anakelim asuma 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 anakelim anasimiliani fidunia omoni kore kore moyo enakala guru suma azol alijibu mukwadulu guru su jiburasi waja mamuria numuma iya kala mafidunia deri guru su wenwita akileta kulu deri guru su agara mederesa kulu guru su ayani dakitari deri guru su mamuria beiti
We've been listening to Street Culture with the song Senti, which means money. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Kusuma, sende yo, mbongwe zate, faranga mwayete, laki, eke, gayoyo, bekedia, yaman, sende yo,
faranga mwayete, sende, sende yo, kurusu, kurusu maf, bongo,